Hello, everyone. My name is Elijah David, minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sanitarian Congregation, miles now the 12th Hour, Liberty Hill, Texas. Today is October 5, 2017, or it's Tuesday 16, 2021. We will start our second service today with a song entitled, Till the Storm Passes By. Till the storm passes by. In the dark of this night, have I hope to hit my face? For the storms are all above me, and there's no hiding place. The crash of the thunder crashes down, hear my cry, keep me safe. Till the storm passes by, till the storm passes over, till the thunder sounds no more, till the clouds roll forever from the sky. Hold me fast, let me stand in the hollow of the hand. Keep me safe till the storm passes by. Many times Satan whispered, there is no use to try, for there's no end of sorrow, there's no hope by and by. But I know thou art with me, and tomorrow I'll rise where the storm never darkens the sky. Till the storm passes over, till the thunder sounds no more, till the clouds are low forever from the sky. Hold me fast and let me stand in the hollow of thy hand. Keep me safe till the storm passes by. When the long night has ended and the storm comes no more, let me stand in thy presence on the bright, peaceful shore, in the land where the tempest never comes beyond my heart. Dwell with thee when the storm passes by. Till the storm passes over, till the thunder sounds no more, till the clouds roll forever from the sky. Hold me fast, let me stand in the hollow of thy hand. Keep me safe till the storm passes by.
Part 3, we're in the Judgment and the Harvest. We're on page 29. We got a picture here of four animals. We got the ram representing Medo-Persia. We got the rough goat representing Alexander, the Grecian kingdom, the third one that Daniel saw in vision. And then we got the fourth beast, which is the nondescript beast. Actually, that third beast, then it's on vision of the leopard-like beast, as well. But that rough goat also represents Alexander. So, we'll do just a little review Obviously, then, Daniel 8:22-24 is parallel with Daniel 7:25. And he shall speak great words against the Most High, shall wear out the saints of the Most High, and think to change times and laws. And they shall be given into his hand until the time and times and the dividing of time. Now, this is talking about that beast and the Catholic Inquisition, 538 A.D., that the 1260-year prophecy, when we had the Dark Ages, and we had the Catholic Church come into power with a church and state rule, and they confirmed the trampling of the sanctuary underfoot and to the ground, didn't destroy it, but they just trampled it down and replaced it with a counterfeit system of worship. And so that's essentially what this here horn between this here rough goat represents. All right. Daniel had the vision in Babylon, northeast of the Promised Land, Palestine. From Babylon, the exceeding great horn went first. South, next east, then north, in order to make the turn westward toward the pleasant land. Thus it went in all four directions. As you get that, first it went south, next it went east, then north. South, east, and north. In order to make the turn westward toward the pleasant land, thus it went in all four directions, denoting that it became a world power. Moreover, also the brass of the great image of Daniel 2, which Daniel explains is to bear rule over all the earth, represents Grecia, however, as neither the goat's first horn nor his subsequent four horns have bore universal rule, and to fulfill the prophecy of the brass kingdom, his exceeding great horn must be the one to bear rule over all the earth. Daniel 2:39. Though the fourth beast of Daniel 7 shows that this desolating power is descended from Rome, for the symbolism of the he-goat goes further back to show that the world power originally descended from one of the Grecian divisions. That was the third kingdom from that Daniel saw in vision from Babylon. Babylon represented by the lion. Medo-Persia, the second kingdom, represented by the bear. And the third one represented by the leopard-like beast. The leopard that had the four heads on it. This is what we're talking about, Daniel 11:5, and later put on the garb of the Christianity, the religion of a God whom his fathers knew not, verse 38. Gradually assuming the ornaments of the sanctuary, he before long magnified himself against the prince, Yahshua of the hosts, the Christians, and disregarding the God of his fathers, he ostensibly became Christianized, but at what cost unto Christianity? Not only was the deity taken away, but also the place of his sanctuary was cast down. In other words, he cast down the Yahshua's place and there set up his own, elevated himself to the Yahshua's place. The word sacrifice being supplied in the connection with the word deity, it manifestly does not belong to the text. Since, however, the English language does not have an exact equivalent of the Hebrew word daily, which is variously rendered continual, perpetual, everlasting, and since none of these terms are synonymous, that carry individual connotations, it is consequently imperative to take them all together as a compound word so as to arrive at the exact truth. In the view, therefore, of this fact also, the fact that the Sabbath doctrine is the only Bible doctrine in the Christian era that can possibly be designated as the daily. So this is a very bad interpretation of the daily. For Vicky Hollis had no authority. He had no authority from the scriptures. And in order to get the authority, he had to go to the law of Moses. And the law of Moses don't teach that in the Christian era that the seventh-day Sabbath is the only thing that can be designated as the daily, pertaining to the worship in respect unto the day. Well, the thing is, the Bible never talked about the daily as respect to a day, other than that it's done twice a day, 365 days out of the year, pertaining unto worship and respect to a day, as well as the continual, perpetual, and everlasting from time immemorial to time eternal. So the daily was set in law at the Garden of Eden, at the third hour and the ninth hour. This is how Yahshua and his father Yahweh came down and visited Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden the day that they sinned. And they visited him at those sacred hours. And between the third hour and the ninth hour of the day is when Adam and Eve had to get their things together and get out of the garden. They had a six-hour window there. So this is how important this daily is. It's fixed in law. It is hence evident that all these various renderings can apply under no other doctrine than the Sabbath, the eternal rest day, and in the divine certification of its perpetuity rang on through the centuries from Sinai, the immutable words, "Wherefore the children of Israel shall keep the Sabbath, to observe the Sabbath throughout their generation." Now, you see, here's, it says, the Sabbath, the eternal rest day, and divine certification of its perpetuity, rang on through the centuries from Sinai, the immutable words. Well, the thing is, the Sabbath reigns on through the centuries, starting in the first week of the creation, Genesis chapter 1. The seventh-day Sabbath was the last day that was created of the week, and it was declared to be a memorial and a rest day and a holy day. And that's found in Genesis chapter 1 and verses chapter 2, actually, verses 1 and 2. And so, "Wherefore the children of Israel shall keep the Sabbath, to observe this Sabbath throughout their generations." So V.T. Hollis says, well, the Seventh-day Adventists then are keeping the daily. So the daily is nothing new then that has to be dealt with. Yet Roland Johnson comes along in 1970 and he says, well, the true interpretation of the daily is not what V.T. Hollis interpreted and what the Seventh-day Adventists hold. That the daily is nothing but the seventh-day Sabbath, that they're already doing it. That's the reason why you couldn't get the Adventists or the Davidians to come on with Brother Johnson in 1970, because he was already taught the false interpretation of the daily. They said, we're already doing it. All Brother Johnson is doing is just resurrecting the law of Moses that was nailed to the cross in their eyes, in their mind's view. That's the way they saw it. They said, and he's calling the daily the twice a day, and Brother Johnson wrote that in a tract, and he told them that this is the way it is. It is twice a day. It is the ordained system. It's the center of the heartbeat. The center of the ordained system of the true worship. So it says, yes, it does say in Exodus 31:12-18, it says, wherefore the children of Israel shall keep thee Sabbath. It also says there in verse 13 of Exodus 31, verily my Sabbath with an S on it, and you shall keep. And then all you have to do is go to Leviticus 23 and see all of those Sabbaths listed. And then more than just the seventh-day Sabbath listed there. There's your new moon Sabbath, comes 12 times in a year. There's the unleavened bread, Passover day, which comes once a year, on the 15th day of the first month every year. There's the annual Pentecost, which comes once a year, the seventh Sabbath after the Feast of Tabernacles the Feast of the Unleavened Bread is over. And then you have the Atonement, comes in the 10th day of the 7th month every year, mentioned right there in Leviticus 23. So you see, Vicky Holliff, there is no way he could bring forth a purified congregation from the Davidian Seventh-day Adventists with their 40-year period that they had allotted unto them from 1930 until 1970. So it just was not to be, because it was out of the sync with the timeline of the prophetic time clock of the 12 hours. Yahshua said in John 11:9, are there not 12 hours in the day? Work while you have the light. Okay? So, Vitiyadav being in the 10th parabolic hour, he was 2 hours removed from the time for the fulfillment of these prophecies of restoring all these holy days of Leviticus 23. Actually, he was 1 hour removed, because Brother Johnson was given the first opportunity, having the birthright, to inherit from this V.T. Holliff his teaching of the rod. Brother Johnson had the first priority as the firstborn for the 11th hour. And so the 11th hour began in 1970, and Brother Johnson is the one that was given the commission for the restoring of all these holy days mentioned there in Leviticus 23. And Brother Johnson recognized that. He understood that to be new truth and new light. And he was given the timetable for restoring that. And he published a creation calendar and literally put together a very prophetic instrument. Yeah. So it says, wherefore the children of Israel shall keep this Sabbath, that's right, the seventh-day Sabbath, to observe this Sabbath throughout their generations for a perpetual covenant. For this Sabbath, I'll put in place of the word it, is a sign between me and the children of Israel forever. For in 6 days Yahweh and Yahshua the Son made the heaven and the earth. They were co-laborers together. Now the Father and the Son says so there in Genesis 1:26, that they were co-laborers in creating Adam and Eve. So, and then it says in Hebrews chapter 1, verse 1 through 3, that Yahshua is beginning the creation of Yahweh, was a co-creator of all things with the Father. So it says right here, for wherefore the children of Israel shall keep this Sabbath, for the observing of this Sabbath throughout their generation. And so indeed, the generations of Israel, once they were born and come into being, and that was with Abraham coming out of Ur of the Chaldees, that's when the Hebrew economy was identified, and with the title waiting to be named Israel, but only had to wait until he could bring forth a descendant of Abraham, which was Jacob, that could inherit the birthright from his older brother, firstborn brother Esau. They were both born at the same time, but Esau first. And so therefore it says, wherefore the children of Israel shall keep this Sabbath, for the observing of the Sabbath throughout their generation. And so we have generations mentioned there in Matthew chapter 1, about 42 generations, and the second one was reaching from down to the cross. The third 14 generations reached from the cross to the end of time, and we represent the end of that 14 generations of the New Testament, the house of David here. And so it says generations throughout the generations. So there's 42 generations that is mentioned there before and after the cross for a perpetual covenant. It is a sign between me and the children of Israel forever, for in 6 days Yahweh made the heaven and the earth. And on the seventh day he rested and was refreshed, Exodus 31, 16 and 17. So this is all V.T. Hallof could do to this prophecy laid down there in Exodus, because his mind wasn't opened up to restore all of the sanctuary system back to his rightful order, only to make the second step in that order. And that second step started in 1930. There are three steps of the genuine movement, and Brother Johnson, he headed up the third step in 1970 and was given the commission for the fulfilling of the 2300 AD prophecy by the restoring of the sanctuary service back to its rightful order and putting it into operation. All right. For the horns taken away, the daily, it says horns taken away the daily, was therefore nothing other than the taking away from the Christian church, which was actually the apostolic congregation, started out as the apostolic congregation of the Nazarene, the followers of the Yeshua through the apostles in the first century, but nevertheless, they were re-identified as Christian other than apostolic. They were at Antioch, and so they were called Christian from that point on. And Paul gave a mention to that. It says, the Yahshua Sabbath. So from the Christian church, the Yahshua Sabbath, and putting in its place Sunday worship, a pagan Sabbath. For the abomination that maketh desolate is a desecration that grieved away Yahweh's presence from the Seventh-day Adventist congregation and the Davidians, which are one and the same, mother and daughter. So it says, so for the ram and the he-goat were shown unto Daniel in the vision in the third year of the reign of the king Belshazzar, Daniel 8:1. Daniel was astonished at the vision, but none understood it. Verse 27. For the time, moreover, had elapsed, and Jerusalem was still a waste. So later in the first year of the Darius, he was made king over the realm of the Chaldeans, Daniel 9:1. Daniel was shown by the books the number of the years whereof the word of Yahweh came unto Jeremiah, the prophet, that he would accomplish 70 years in the desolation of Jerusalem. Verse 2. Jerusalem, however, was still a desolation through the time of the people's captivity, according unto the prophet, according unto the prophecy, it was fulfilled, and the vision was still none, in other words, not understood as it clearly is seen from the Daniel's prayer. I set my face unto the Yahweh Elohim to seek by prayer and supplication with fasting and sackcloth and ashes. And I prayed unto the Yahweh, my Elohim, O Yahweh, according to all thy righteousness. I beseech thee, let thine anger and thy fury be turned away from the city Jerusalem, thy holy mountain, because for our sins and for the iniquities of our fathers, Jerusalem, and thy people are become a reproach unto all that are about us. Now therefore, O our Yahweh, hear the prayer of thy servant and his supplication, and cause thy face to shine upon thy sanctuary that is destined for the Yahweh's sake. Yea, while I was speaking in prayer, even the man Gabriel, whom I had seen in the vision at the beginning, in the 8th chapter, being caused to fly swiftly, touched me about the time of the evening oblation, and said, 70 weeks are determined upon thy people, and upon the holy city to finish the transgression, and to make an end of sins, and to make reconciliation for iniquity, and to bring in everlasting righteousness, and to seal up the vision and prophecy, and to anoint the most holy. Know therefore and understand that from the going forth of the commandment to restore, now here's that word restore, and I mean to build Jerusalem unto the Messiah, the Prince, shall be 7 weeks, and 62 weeks. The street shall be built again, and the wall even in troublous time. And after 62 weeks shall Messiah be cut off, but not for himself. And the people of the Prince that shall come shall destroy the city and the sanctuary, and the end thereof shall be with the flood, and unto the end of the war desolations are determined. And she shall confirm the covenant with many for 1 week, and in the midst of the week he shall cause the sacrifice and the oblation to cease, and for the overspreading of the abomination he shall make it desolate, even unto the consummation, and that determined shall be poured upon the desolate. Daniel 9:3-27. For the angel apportioned the 70 weeks into 3 periods, 7 weeks and 62 weeks and 1 week. And though in his words to Daniel, quoted above, he explained the time prophesied, yet Daniel did not fully understand the vision, as he did certainly, however, understand the angel's interpretation of the ram and of the goat to be symbolical of the Persia and Grecia, respectively. The work of the exceeding great horn was therefore what he did not understand, and so it was that later in those days he was again mourning, this time 3 full weeks, whereupon he said, I saw a certain man clothed in linen, whose loins were girded with the fine gold of Euphrates. Then said he unto me, now I am come to make thee understand what shall befall thy people in the latter days. For yet the vision is for many days, for at the time of the end shall be the vision. Daniel 10:5, 12, 14, 8, 17. For the chapters 11 and 12 contain the explanation of the vision promised by the angel in chapter 10, can be readily recognized not only from the continuity of the angel's speech, but also from the fact that these chapters are the explanation of the vision in the 8th chapter. For the reader's convenience, we quote the last 2 verses of chapter 10 and a part of the angel's explanation recorded in chapter 11. Then said he, know thou wherefore I come unto thee, and now will I return to fight with the prince of Persia. And when I am gone forth, lo, the prince of Grecia shall come, but I will show thee that which is noted in the scripture of the truth. And there is none that holdeth with me in these things but Michael your prince. Also I in the first year of Darius the Mede, even I stood to confirm and to strengthen him, and now will I show thee the truth. Behold, there shall stand up yet 3 kings in Persia, and the 4th shall be far richer than they all, and by his strength, through his riches, he shall stir up all against the realm of Grecia, and a mighty king shall stand up that shall rule with a great dominion and do according to his will. And when he shall stand up, his kingdom shall be broken and shall be divided toward the four winds of the heaven, and not to his posterity, nor according unto his dominion which he ruled. For his kingdom shall be plucked up even for others beside those, Daniel 10:20-21, and Daniel 11:1-4. It is evident that in this chapter, the angel is explaining in the detail the vision, which was shown unto Daniel in the 8th chapter, and that Daniel 8:11-12 is parallel in the time with Daniel 11:31. A comparison of both scriptures is found on page 25, makes clear that the 11th chapter is an explanation in the particular of the power that is projected by the exceeding great horn of the 8th chapter. Also, it makes clear that the sanctuary spoken of in Daniel 8:11 cannot be any other than Yahweh's sanctuary, for on the one hand, a heathen structure can never be of strength, or on the other hand, be polluted when it has never been cleaned. And moreover, never does the Bible call it a sanctuary. And finally, the very fact that the sanctuary in the Jerusalem was never polluted nor cleansed in the manner described by the angel, but was left desolate and was ultimately destroyed, Daniel 9:26, puts the riveting evidence to the proof that neither the polluting nor the cleansing took place in the Old Testament era. This solid conclusion is made doubly fast by virtue of Yahshua's statement, page 25, placing the work of the desolating power in the Christian dispensation. Here is no time other than the 2,300 days, Daniel 8:14, and the 70 weeks, Daniel 9:24, to which can apply the statement, the time appointed was long, Daniel 10:1. But seeing that the former period was too long for restoring and cleansing the sanctuary in Jerusalem, and that the latter period was too long for the rebuilding of the city, for the 70 years spoken of by Jeremiah were already fulfilled, Daniel was prompted to cry out to the Yahweh for understanding. Then he says and continues, I heard one saint speaking, and another saint said unto that certain saint which spake, how long shall be the vision concerning the day and the transgression of the desolation to give both the sanctuary and the host to be trodden underfoot? And he said unto me, under 2,300 days, then shall the sanctuary be cleansed. Daniel 8:13-14. And I'll guarantee you, those that hid out in the rocks and mountains to escape that beast during the Dark Ages, they kept the daily. You can bet they kept the daily faithfully. For the training of the host is a massacre of the Christians who would not worship according unto the dictates of the horn power. For the treading down of the sanctuary, the church gave rise unto the establishing of an earthly priesthood in the place of the Yahshua. Did you get that? I'm going to read that again. For the treading of the host and the massacring of the apostolic Nazarene followers that was taken over by pagan Rome and then transitioned into ecclesiastical Rome, who would not worship according unto the dictates of the horn power, for the treading down of the sanctuary, that is the apostolic congregation of the Nazarene Creed, gave rise unto the establishing of an earthly priesthood. So you had to trample down the sanctuary service, you had to take away the daily, you had to change the Sabbath from Sabbath to Sunday. and the place of Yahshua, who ministers from within the heavenly sanctuary. So here Yahshua goes into the heavens. He goes into the heavenly sanctuary above, which is a prototype of the one here on earth is a prototype of the one in heaven. And he goes in there as a high priest to minister on our behalf according to the law of Moses. And so Yahshua is up there. But the only one that he could minister to then during the Dark Ages was those that was hiding out in the rocks in the mountain. So they could continue performing the ordained system of true worship. Well, that's what Brother Johnson is called to restore in 1970, the ordained system of true worship. And lo and behold, at the end of 32 years, Yahweh sent him a message by me and said, restore that day. Put it back in operation. He says, no, we can't keep it here. We got to make a living, and it's too hard to work out in the public sector and keep these dailies faithfully. It's just too hard to do. So, it became might not impossible for him to do. As furthermore, the commandment to rebuild Jerusalem went forth in 457 B.C., Ezra 7:21-27. The starting point of the 70 weeks proves to be one with that of the 2300 days. In localizing Yahshua's ministry within this period, the angel said, he, Yahshua, shall confirm the covenant with many for 1 week. And in the midst of the week, he shall cause a sacrifice and the oblation to cease. Daniel 9:27. Since the confirming of the covenant with the many of the Jews was accomplished during the 7 years from the beginning of Yahshua's ministry, the time of his baptism, to the time Peter was commissioned to take the gospel to the Gentiles, Acts 10:28. Read the entire chapter. And since in the midst of this period, Yahshua was crucified, the week proves to be 7 literal years and reveals that the 2300-day period must be computed by the rule of Ezekiel 4, reckoning a day for a year. Thus why? From the going forth of the commandment found in Ezra 7:21-27, to restore and to rebuild Jerusalem. And see, this is a commandment. To restore and rebuild Jerusalem. The beginning of the 2300 days unto the Messiah the Prince, unto Yahshua at his baptism. Okay, it says, from the going forth of the commandment, found in Ezra 7:21-27, for the restoring and for the rebuilding of Jerusalem, as the beginning of the 2300 days, unto the Messiah the Prince, unto Yahshua at his baptism, and they shall be 7 weeks, 49 years, and 62 weeks, 434 years, totaling 483 years in all. With the first 7 weeks, or 49 years, being for the rebuilding of the city. Then after 7 weeks, plus 62 weeks, 483 years, shall Messiah be cut off, and the people of the prince, the Romans that shall come, shall destroy the city and the sanctuary, fulfilled by the Titus, about 70 A.D. And the end thereof shall be with the flood, and unto the end of the war, desolations are determined. And he, Yahshua, shall confirm the covenant with many for 1 week, 7 years, beginning at his baptism. And in the midst of the week, in the midst of the 7 years, he shall cause the sacrifice and the oblation to cease by the sacrifice of himself and by its transfer to the heavenly sanctuary. His sacrifice taking the place of the earthly sacrifice, and thus the heavenly sanctuary taking the place of the earthly sanctuary, with the Yahshua himself being the high priest, and for the overspreading of the abomination, he shall make it the temple and Jerusalem desolate, his presence completely removed, even until the consummation, And that determines her report upon the best of Daniel 9:25-27. For the remainder of the 2300 days or years reached until the time of the cleansing of the sanctuary, see illustration on page 37. Counting forward 2300 years from October 457 B.C., the terminus is October, 1844 A.D. And as the angel said, under 2300 days, then shall the sanctuary be cleansed. The cleansing must since have commenced in 1844, the very year in which, for the first time in history, the first angel's message rang forth the proclamation, "Fear Yahweh and give glory unto Him, for the hour of His judgment is come." Revelation 14:7. Daniel 7:9-10. The time that the great judge and the heavenly tribunal sit in the judgment to separate the bad from the good, that is, to blot from the book of the life the names of those who have entered the service of the Yahshua but have not endured unto the end. Since this fearsome truth, as here revealed, finds its counterpart in the Yahshua's parable of the wheat and the tares, the parables must necessarily therefore teach the investigative judgment among the living. So, when the judgment starts at the house of Yahweh and it starts with the living, and that's the judgment of the living, and that's the closing out of the judgment of the dead period. So now all those that are living are coming under judgment. And so therefore, the living then started there at Kermit, Texas. All those that was living in 2002, 2003, the members of the Gilead Center, they all came under judgment. That was the beginning of the judgment of the living. Beginning of the 12th parabolic hour, and the beginning of the judgment of the living. So it said, "Let both go together," commands Yahshua in regard to the commingling of the wheat and the tares. So Ezekiel 9 constitutes the judgment of the living going on. And it's, Ezekiel 9 is the executive judgment. It's not the investigative anymore. The angel with the rod of inkhorn by his side that goes through the city, and Ezekiel 9 that marks everybody's sign of crime for the abomination that be done the mystery of, it's because their records have already been investigated. It's the reason why the mark was put on. And those that weren't signing a crime, they didn't get the mark, and so therefore they were cut off. That's the judgment of the living in progress. Until the harvest, and in the time of the harvest, I will say unto the reapers, "Get ye together first the tares and bind them in bundles to burn them, but give the wheat into my barn." Matthew 13:30. Here the Yahweh is parabolically teaching that a time of investigation will come, and that then the angels will remove the sinners from the congregation of the righteous, Psalms 1:5. Again, the kingdom of the heavens is like unto a net that was cast into the sea, and gathered of every kind, which when it was full, they drew the shore and sat down, and gathered the good into vessels, but cast the bad away. So shall it be at the end of the world. The angels shall come forth and sever the wicked from among the just, Matthew 13:47-49. In both of these parables, Yahshua is sounding the forewarning that the investigative judgment will take place in the time called the harvest. Okay. Well, the thing is, you don't, this is not right. This is not right. You don't investigate in the time of the harvest. The harvest are the results of those that have been investigated in order to be harvested into the barn. They're out in the field. They've done been investigated. In other words, the field was sown with wheat and tares. And were you able to determine the tares? After everything is fully grown. So when the wheat's fully grown, there it is. And what does the harvesters do? They go out first and bind the tares in the bundle. They pull them up away from the wheat, bind them in bundles, get them out of the way. You cannot mix this fungus. You can't mix this fungus with this wheat. And so, that's the tares. They're the fungus. They're the diseased ones. They're the impure ones. And then you got the wheat standing all by itself. Once you get the tares out of it, then the harvesters can go right straight through the field and they can harvest every stalk of wheat that there is and everything that they can hold in their net, they take it to the barn. Okay? So that's, the investigative judgment is going on while the wheat is growing up. When the wheat sprouts above the ground, and it starts growing, that's your investigative judgment starting. And as soon as that wheat gets grown, that's the investigative judgment is over. Because the tares also became grown. And you could look out there in the field and you could just see exactly which ones were the tares and which one were the wheat. And it was no problem. There was just a little different look about them that the harvester was able to go out and just pluck up all that tares and bind them in bundles and set them at the side of the field and then go in there and reap the harvest because the investigative judgment is over. It's not in the time of harvest. It's before the harvest. Now, that it says, which is in the end of the world, the time in which the 2300 days culminate, this is the angel declared. Understand, O Son of Man, for at the time of the end shall be the vision. Daniel 8:17. So, the 2300 days culminate in 1844, from 457 B.C. to 1844, 2300 days. And so, what happened? You started the investigative judgment for the dead that went on for the next 158 years from 1844 to 2002. Then the books was closed on the investigation of the dead. The record had already been made. It took 158 years to finally separate the wheat from the tares in the book of the records of those that had died and gone on before. And once that was completed, then when the judgment of the living people had an atonement restored and had an atonement, what happened? Then those book of records that had been judged already investigated before, those that was not to have eternal life, their names were taken out of the book. And so, at the atonement, for the living, okay? So it says, understand, O Son of Man, for at the time of the end shall be the vision. Daniel 8:17. Shut thou up the vision, for it shall be for many days. Daniel 8:26. For yet the vision is for many days. Daniel 10:14. Pointing directly to the time that the investigative judgment should take place among the living, Malachi parallels both the parables and his prophecy. The Yahweh whom you seek shall suddenly come to his temple, but who may abide the day of his coming, and who shall stand when he appeareth? For he is like a refiner's fire and like full of soap, and he shall sit as refiner and purify the silver, and he shall purify the sons of Levi and purge them as gold and silver, that they may offer unto the Yahweh an offering in righteousness. Malachi 3:1-3. There's a cleansing call for the parables, and in the Malachi's prophecy have never taken place. The investigative judgment of the living is obviously then yet a future. This investigative work is therefore occasioned by the work of the separation in the earthly sanctuary. That's the Seventh Day Adventist Church in 2002, as brought to view also in Ezekiel 9. And behold, six men came from the way of the higher gate, which lieth toward the north, and every man has slaughter weapon in his hand. And the one man among them was clothed with a linen, with a rod of zinc horn by his side. And they went in and stood beside the brazen altar, and the glory of Yahweh of Israel was gone up from the cherub, whereupon he was to the threshold of the house, and he called unto the man clothed with the linen, which had the rod of zinc horn by his side. And Yahweh said unto him, Go through the midst of the city, through the midst of Jerusalem, and set a mark upon the foreheads of the men that sign their cry for all the abomination that be done in the midst thereof. And unto the elders he said in mine hearing, Go ye after him through the city, and smite, let not your eyes spare, neither have ye pity, slay utterly old and young, both maids and little children and women, but come not near any man upon whom is a mark, and begin at my sanctuary. Then they began at the ancient men which were before the house, at verses 2 to 6. Here the people are shown to be in a mixed state, tares and wheat commingled. Now this is where the Adventists have been for 158 years up to 2002. They had been commingled. Wheat and tares had been commingled for 158 years. With the time just ahead of them, when on the one hand, those who have sighed and cried for the abomination in their midst shall receive the mark of the deliverance, while on the other hand, those who have not sighed and cried shall be left without the mark to perish in their sins under the angel's slaughter weapon. From this separation, the one in the church come forth the first fruits. Then follows the separation from among the nations, as seen in the parable of Matthew 25, prophetically describing Yahshua's coming, though not the one viewed in 1 Thessalonians 4:16 and 17. For at the time of the latter, the dead in the Yahshua shall rise first, and we which are alive and remain shall be caught up together with them in the clouds to meet the Yahweh in the air. Whereas at the time of the former, when the Son of Man shall come in his glory and all the holy angels with him, then shall he sit upon the throne of his glory, the kingdom of congregation, which up unto this point consists only of the first fruits. This brings in verse 30. This hour, contact us at the 11th hour call. That's number 11. Click on our audio archive. We're going to close now with a song entitled, Just When I Need Him Most.
I need him most. Just when I need him, Joshua is near. Just when I falter, just when I fear. Ready to help me, ready to cheer. Just when I need him most. Just when I need him most. Just when I need him most, Joshua is here to comfort and cheer. Just when I need him most, just when I need him, Joshua is true, never forsaking all the way through, giving for burden. Pleasures of you, just when I need him most. Just when I need him most, just when I need him most. Joshua is near to comfort and cheer, just when I need him most. Just when I need him. Joshua is strong, maybe not bad and all the day long. For all my sorrow, giving a song, just when I need him most. Just when I need him most, just when I need him most. Joshua is near to comfort and cheer, just when I need him. most. Just when I need Him, He is my hope. And to fall upon Him I call. In daily waiting, lest I should fall. Just when I need Him most. Just when I need Him most, just when I need Him most, just when I need His comfort and share, just when I need Him.